this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and you can find us on Facebook and YouTube. And we just released our first edition of our newsletter in September, so more to come on that. Today we have a great guest, Kimberly McLaughlin, and Kimberly is going to tell us about her many years of research. So welcome, Kimberly. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
No, I'm happy to have you. And so now, you know, in the notes that you sent me, your family has been doing this research since the 70s. Is that right?
That's correct. And it's my husband's family. And they started in 1970. And it's been a family affair ever since. It's been carried on through the generations and just updated in 2023. So it's been very exciting.
I bet.
Yeah.
I dare say your family or your husband's family is probably the oldest researchers that I've come across so far.
And to follow their research, it was all done, of course, in the 70s, old school. And I'm very impressed and very happy to have learned from it and to be able to tell the story.
Yeah. So who started and why?
Okay. So it started out. So my husband, his mother and three siblings grew up without their parents. Their parents had died young, very young, and the children were raised by an aunt. So my husband, my mother-in-law and her siblings did not know their parents. And so it started with my husband's aunt, Sibby. Her name was Sylvia, and she started by trying to track down her father, who was born in Italy, and try and figure out more about him because he had been an immigrant and had very little details about his family life. So she went right to work and made use of an Italian Heritage Center that's here in Portland, Maine. And she got some help and dug in and did some really great research.
So I had no idea that there was an Italian Heritage Center in Portland, Maine.
There
You know, us New Yorkers don't associate anything north of us with Italian. Boston, maybe. You know?
Right. There is, as a matter of fact, just 2 weekends ago, there was Italian Heritage Weekend here where they had shut down streets in Portland for the Italian Heritage Week. You know, and they had a great bazaar and great foods and celebrated all things Italian. So there is a good population here.
Yeah, and I didn't know that. So now my connection to Maine, my Italian connection to Maine, mm-hmm. is my cousin Joey, who is the youngest son of my uncle Giovanni, mm-hmm. who and they came to Italy in the 50s. My grandparents came in 1915, but my uncle stayed behind when he was a baby with his grandparents.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what college Joe went to, but he went to college in Maine and stayed there. And I know he's done art and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he had the foresight to record my uncle's story in Barres before he passed away. And I finally got him to translate that into English. So that was a great find.
Right. So the Italian Heritage Center here plays into the story pretty acutely because so Andy's his grandparents both died young of things that are preventable these days, right? It was pneumonia for both of them, but one died in 1928. So Andy's the siblings there were born in 1924, 25, 26, 27, only to have their father, the Italian immigrant, die in 1928. So you can see how they were all really young children. And of course, so the Italian we're talking about is Mr. Salvatore Vincenzo Nicolai. And he was born in 1895 in Montefiascone, Italy. So he comes to the United States, he raises this family, he gets married. And when he comes with some cash in his pocket. And the goal, I think, was to provide money for his family back in Italy. This was 1912. And, you know, and I know probably through your research and the people you've talked to, 1912 was, you know, a major time for Italian immigration. He came and he stayed and he worked hard. And he came in 1912, but didn't marry until later, like 1923, as a matter of fact, because this year is the 100th anniversary of their wedding. So You know, he came, he worked really hard, passed away, but he had married a Canadian woman. And so she took the children back to Canada. And they only to lose their mother a couple of years later. She died in 1936. So then they all became orphans. And they were raised in Maine because they were American citizens. That's the crux of the story. So they grow up not knowing much about their parents, you know, and they grew up to adulthood. They had successfully, you know, started their families. And that's when Sylvia, who moved to Portland, because all the kids were raised in northern Maine. So Sylvia moved to southern Maine in Portland, where they had the Italian community. Some of her friends were Italian, and they offered to help her. She said, you know, I don't know much about my father. And she knew very little, and or her mother or her father, really. But so engaging in the Italian heritage community people, they were able to help her decide how to write a letter and to get information. And so that's how it all started. And that was probably the early 70s, 1970, that she started doing that. So some years had passed, and none of these siblings, they all grew up to adulthood, had families, but really didn't know their parents, or at least their Italian father. They were all so young.
Wow, that's some story. So now, what brought him here in the first place? Did they find out what industry he worked in, or what kind of jobs that he had?
So when he got here, he was 17 years old. So he had just begun, I believe, you know, to find his profession. And when he got here, he originally had, he came into, you know, New York City. He came through Ellis Island, and then he went to Philadelphia, where he became a rigger. And we only have that because there was some document, you know, that was left behind. I don't know what a rigger is, but that was in Philadelphia. And then he went to Connecticut and Massachusetts, and he ended up staying in Massachusetts, but he became a boiler operator. So he operated in the trades, which offered him, I think, a really good income. So he was able to get some money, and he didn't marry for quite some time until 1920. You know, so he landed in 1912, didn't marry until 23. So in the meantime, you know, there were documents for the World War I draft and some other things that indicated that he was responsible for two adults and three children in Italy, meaning his parents and his brothers and sisters. So he was sending money back to Italy, I think, to help the family. But all the rest of the little details, like why he came, for sure, we really will never know. But we can just guess that, as all immigrants at that time, you know, there was poverty, there was war and things like that, that I think the parents thought, you know, he's unattached, and they just sent him to the United States with the idea that he would help provide for them in some way.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. That's, could you imagine coming at 17 and just doing that?
I can't.
It's beyond belief.
I know. And, you know, he must have, in our, you know, when we were just delving into this and learning about him, he must have had a really great work ethic. Like, he got here, he tried, you know, to be a rigger. I mean, well, he was, and then he turned into a boiler operator. I mean, so those were things where, number one, he probably didn't know English. So he had to really work hard to get into those professions and earn a living. And when he did marry, he was in Boston, and he bought a home in Norwood, Mass. So he bought a home, he was doing well and caring for his family. So, you know, he was successful in all attempts, you know, from what we can see, he was very successful.
Wow. You know, and, you know, you don't know, maybe somebody took him under their wing and got him into the trades or something like that.
Right. I mean, had
again,
to have
the community stuck together in that sense. It's just, It's just beyond belief at 17 years old to accomplish all of that in such a right. short period of time, buy a house and everything. I mean,
right. And so he also had two brothers, or two or three, and his youngest brother he was born shortly after 1900. He left and went to Argentina, probably for the same reasons. But, and we always thought that there were quotas and things. And so we surmised that he couldn't get into the United States because of the quotas. And we thought, well, they probably just, you know, said, that's enough Italian people. You go to Argentina. We thought that all along. And then when I asked someone, they said, no, what had happened was Salvatore had died so young that there was no more correspondence or no information going to Italy. No one knew what happened to him. So they didn't want to send their other son to the United States, not knowing what happened to Salvatore. So he went to Argentina.
Wow.
So, that's, you know, something. you guess all these things and come to find out they're not true. You know, you just try to figure out, but we did ask, I asked that question.
Well, yeah. And there was, you know, a large Italian community in Argentina, especially back then. And
right.
then after they closed everything here, more and more went to South America. And that was in the 70s. What happened between the 70s and now? What have you found out? Have you found out new things? Has your husband gone back to the town? Have they found relatives in Italy?
So you can imagine that the relatives in Italy didn't know anything. They didn't know what had happened to Salvatore. That's Andy's grandfather. And I did send you a picture of him. He's really quite striking. He's very handsome. And so they didn't know, and they worried. Until Sibby started looking, we didn't know that they were missing him, right? Because we didn't know who their family was. Sibby didn't know. So with the help of the Italian Heritage Center, they crafted a letter, and she had received her father's death certificate, Salvatore's death certificate from Massachusetts, and it said that he was born in Montefiascone. So she had that clue that that's the only thing she knew. So they crafted a letter to the mayor of Montefiascone, and it basically just said, look, you know, this is my name. My father was born there. Are there any relatives? You know, I could read you the whole letter, but they made it very concise. They said, is there anybody there that you could connect me with? You know, he is deceased, that kind of thing. It was really quite quick. And within a week, she received a letter back from the mayor saying, yes, I know your family. He listed, you know, the living brothers and sisters of Salvatore, gave that and sent it right back to Sibby. So she received immediate response. And he said, the mayor had told her, I will forward this to you. They will be in contact with you. So that's how quick that happened in 1 week. So once that happened, they started sending letters to Sibby. And if you don't mind, I would like to read just one letter for you.
Sure. Yeah,
because
absolutely.
it's the response that she got back from Uncle Cesare. Cesare was Salvatore's brother. So just imagine, you know, that they had never known what had happened to Salvatore. So it said, my dearest cousin, Sylvia, my dear, as soon as we received this important and great letter, I quickly answered, hoping that you are still in good health, of which I can assure you of me and my family. Dearest cousin, to tell you how very, very happy to hear from you. For certain, it was a joyous occasion that only you and all of us can know. All of these years, not knowing anything of your existence, brought a lot of hurt, having always many thoughts that torment like a sore that never healed, and that today you have helped to heal. Dearest, now we know very little, but for the moment that will do by being happy and satisfied. Soon we will find out more about one another. Now I will tell you a little bit about us, even though many years have passed without knowing anything. Since the war, we haven't heard anything from you and yours. The way I remember it and the way your mother related it to you hasn't changed a bit. My brothers are three, my sisters two. My brothers are Joseph, Cesare, Consalvo is now in Argentina. My sisters are Maria and Filomena. We would be so happy if our grandfather was alive to hear that we are corresponding. He died in 1947 at the age of 86. Today, it would be impossible to have him living. There are so many things to relate, but there's no paper large enough, but little at a time. When we write, we will be able to tell each other all that there is to know. For this is important moment. Your correspondence assures me that you exist. We have always prayed that this would find, that we would find each other someday, and now it has happened. This is the family of Cesare who is writing, and it is composed as follow. Cesare, his wife Seria, three children, two boys Salvatore and Alvaro, the girl Severina, married with two children. And this is our family. Dearest Sylvia, I am Salvatore, the oldest son of Cesare, who is writing this, and I assure you, I have a desire to see you one day. I'd give anything to get to know you and spend time with you all, but maybe that's impossible. Now I close with live sentiment and kisses and affectionate salutations for all the joy that we have received in hearing from you after all these years. You have given us great happiness. Again, I say affectionately, so long, and I'm waiting for a prompt reply. Affectionately, cousin and uncle and family, Uncle Cesare.
Wow, so that's great.
Yeah. Is that just, that is like the most meaningful letter. So in 1970, they were able to reach each other, and she wrote back, and they started communicating, and Sibby ended up going to Italy. I think in 70 or 71, I forget which year, but she took Sibby, my mother-in-law, Ruth, and Sibby's daughter, Didi. They went to Italy and they met the family for the first time since, you know, forever because Salvatore had left. And no, so you can tell by the letter, no one knew what had happened to Salvatore. Yeah. They were hurt. They were, you know, maybe forlorn, maybe it might be a good word, or heartbroken.
Well, yeah, of course. And, you know, it's really back then was tough to, you know, it's not like today, you know, where you go on Facebook or your phone call or you know, that stuff didn't exist. And you know, what's really amazing about it, how quick they answered, the mayor answered and everything like that. I don't think we get those responses today.
No, it was, and that's what we all said was, look how quick they responded to each other. You know, she wrote one letter and it was a week and then another week. And it was fast. It was fast and furious, so to speak. They were very happy to meet each other, to connect again. So that trip was in 1970 and they stayed a week or two. And and Ruth had written a journal. And in my podcast, we go over the journal. We read it's quite long, but it's filled with the very same sentiment that we just, you know, that I just read for you there. I can't believe, you know, we feel like family. We've never met each other, but we feel like family, you know, and they had such a good time. So that was 1970. And then my husband and I, you know, we continued on, you know, I'm the genealogist of 35 years and of course fascinated by this story. So we picked up again and we started communicating with the family again. And, you know, we've always known that they were there, but Facebook is so amazing that it allows us to have groups and things and we communicate that way. And so Andy and I decided, you know, there was one of Andy's cousins from Argentina had come to the United States and met with everybody. Because she was at the time a student, we decided we were going to go to Argentina. So we went to Argentina to meet Consalvo's family. Consalvo was passed, but he was Salvatore's brother. And he had a full family down there that we went down and met. That was 2017. And that kind of started some thoughts. And then we thought, well, now, you know, we have to go to Italy. So 2019, my husband and I and three of his sisters went to Italy, and to say that it just recreated the whole event all over again, if that makes sense to you. We just did exactly what his mother had done years, you know, in 1970, we did it in 2019, and it was the most amazing trip. We spent 2 weeks over there and had the best time, and the families reunited like you wouldn't, like it was never separation. It was instant family.
I know, isn't that amazing? I mean, I had that experience last year with my dad's cousins, my dad's first cousins that I never knew existed.
Isn't that something?
I'm a true believer in things don't happen by accident. I mean,
okay, yeah.
Just before we took the trip, I was contacted on Facebook by my dad's half first cousin, who was actually younger than my father. That's a long story. Yeah. But in any event, he said, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to come to lunch when you have the lunch. And then that day he said, I know you want to go to the cemetery. I'm going to meet you there. And then you're going to come with me. And I said, well, it's okay. If it's okay with the people running the show here, we're game.
Yeah.
And he took us up to his apartment. There were two women in their 90s. My dad's first cousins from my grandmother's youngest brother.
Mm-hmm.
And they had my parents' wedding. I've told this several times for people who are getting bored here. But they had my parents' wedding photo from 1944.
Right.
And they knew gossip from the 1960s. So, you know,
they're the people you want to talk to.
Well, yeah, my grandmother and my aunt, my dad's older sister, they were in touch for all these years and nobody ever said anything.
I know.
I was like, you know, my father's passed away in 1997. So, you know, I couldn't talk to him about it. And the only thing I remember is probably 35 years ago or something like that. He told me that he had family in Torre del Greco.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were in Italy the first time, 28 years ago, we saw the sign, you know, this way to Torre del Greco. And I said to my wife, I said, remember my father mentioned, you know, and she said, yeah, but I didn't know who, I didn't know where. And
right.
And like you said, it was like we knew each other forever.
Right. So the co-host of my podcast, my sister, Laura, she has a saying that says, the DNA in me recognizes the DNA in you.
Hmm.
And to her, that's what it means. It means we know each other by DNA. We just know each other, you know, we're connected without even knowing it, you know? So, it's a, you know, we kind of nerd out over the DNA aspect, but we think, you know, there's something there.
Yeah, no, I've never heard that before, but that's a great way of saying it. Cause it's, you know, it's not just me. It's not just you. I hear that from so many other people.
Right.
They're walking down the street in the hometown and somebody walks up to them and say, you look like somebody, you know, well, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, how the Italians will ask, and I'll tell you something happened today. We're going to Puglia next week. And I'm going to meet some more cousins from my dad's family, but also go to my mom's hometown in Torito Bari. And, just today, somebody posted in my group, a genealogist from Bari. His office or his home is like less than a mile from where we're staying in Bari.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be an accident.
That's right.
It just can't be an accident. I mean, what are the odds, right?
I know. It's amazing. And that's exactly what we say all the time. What are the chances that this happens? And so then you say, you know, everything happens for a reason. So I don't disagree with you there.
Well, I'm a true believer in, you know, the ancestors, they want to be found.
Right.
And some of us are just chosen to do that.
And who knows why? It's like, I don't sleep at night. You know, sometimes I'm thinking, well, how does this one connect to that one? And where should I look next? And should I call this person? That kind of thing. You know, it's constant in my mind. So I don't know if that makes me chosen or crazy.
Probably a little bit of both, I would think. Yeah. Like so, my wife always says, are you looking for dead people again? I said, yeah, I am.
Yeah, they have things to say. But so if you want, what we did was in 2019, we met, you know, all the cousins, Andy and I and his three sisters, Lisa, Cindy, and Evelyn. We went to Italy and had a grand time. So we invited them back, of course. But, you know, we made note that in 2023, it was the 100th anniversary of Salvatore and Ruth's wedding. So Lisa kind of put into motion a little bit of planning and, you know, a year ahead of time told everybody, hey, let's all get together. Let's all of Salvatore's and Ruth's descendants get together and have a party, you know, family reunion. And so that's what they did. And that just happened a few weeks ago. And there were over 84 people, I think, there, 84 or more. And so I think, I don't know if I sent you a link for that or not.
Yes. Pitch. Yeah. You sent me that photo. Yep.
So, I mean, from those two people who, you know, had such a successful beginning, you know, they had four children and then it just blossomed into this huge group of people. And so we got together this summer and went over all the Italian reminiscing and exchanged pictures. Everybody's looking at the pictures and I had the family tree out And so we span four continents from Salvatore's parents. We span, you know, Argentina, Europe, and there's also Australia. One of the siblings went to Australia and the United States. So they're spread out everywhere. And the only place we haven't been yet, I guess, is Australia. So I have to do more. Yeah, I have to do some more research for that. But, you know, it's been such a joy. And the family, you know, to connect like that is, there's just nothing else like it.
And there's so many Italians in Australia, another place that you don't mm-hmm. think,
yeah,
you know, but I get a lot of correspondence from people in Australia, a lot of people, mm-hmm. you know, join the group and things like that.
So I don't know the backstory as to why so many Italians went to Australia. I don't know that story. I don't, you know, was there a common theme or?
Yeah. You know, actually I'm interviewing somebody from Australia. I think next month or November. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to ask. I would imagine it was just for opportunity, but you know, the States was closed.
Right. At some point, all of a sudden it stopped. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they closed it in 23, 24, right. whenever it mm-hmm. was, for many, many years. And in fact, you know, my uncle, even though his four brothers all served in, you know, all born in America, all served in World War II, four of his other five brothers. He had to wait in line. He had to go. He went to Canada for like 4 years.
Right.
And brought his family there. And then I think he went in 49 and 50 and the family came in 5 years later or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I mean, even to that point, it was still closed.
Right.
You still had the quotas and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, that is some incredible. Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. That's only one small part of your husband's family and your family. What research have you done with your family? What have you found in your family?
Well, you know, and that's, I found a lot, a lot. So what happened was in the beginning, like 35 years ago, when I was, you know, just a young person, my aunt gave me a genealogy that another aunt had done. And it said that my father, my maiden name is Burgoyne, and said that we were related to General Johnny Burgoyne, who was in the Revolutionary War. They said, sure, we're related. And she had it written out. It was just typed up thing. And I said, oh, well, isn't that interesting? That was it. I was hooked. And I'd had nothing else other than that family tree. I wanted to prove it, right? I wanted to say, okay. And I still to this day, 35 years later, have not finished proving it. I've gotten one link away and I'm stuck. I can't find it. I can't prove it. But nonetheless, that is what started me. I'm still working on that, but I'm also working on many other things. And, you know, in my podcast, we talk about some NPEs, you know, some non-parental event is what they used to call it, but they don't call it that anymore. Non-paternity event, that kind of thing. So we found out some of those things in our family. And, you know, my grandmother died when my father was 11. So I never knew her. And that is why the name of my podcast is Chasing Hazel's Tales. Hazel was my grandmother. I never knew her. And we had to go looking for her story to try and figure out who she was because no one ever talked about her. So that was a big part of our genealogy, you know, journey is doing that. And that's what, you know, we went on to talk about in the podcast. Plus, I've done, you know, my mother's family goes to Sleepy Hollow, New York, and I'm going there in October to look at the old Dutch church and do some, I have, you know, relatives or ancestors in those cemeteries, those old cemeteries, and I can't wait to go. So we have people there, and the Canadian connection, you know, because a lot of our family comes down through New Brunswick, Canada, and the Irish element, and to this day, here's my Achilles heel. To this day, I have many family lines. I'm like, you know, 40% Irish. I have many family lines. I cannot find where they come from in Ireland. I cannot do it. I can
really?
Every document I read, everything I find just says they were born in Ireland. That's all it says.
Wow. I mean, it's not unusual for that, but usually you come across, you know, someplace.
One,
you know?
Right. Yeah, one. Right. Yeah, exactly. One person, please just write it down. But, and, you know, try and find Bridget Kennedy in Ireland. Okay. There's only 800,000 of those, you know, there's just the most common names.
So going back to Sleepy Hollow, because I used to pass there all the time. We used to go when we went upstate many, many, many years ago. So is there Dutch in that part of the family?
In my part? Right. Yeah. Right. So the Dutch Reformed Church has been there since like 1620. And it's the connection I have is through an ancestor called Dirk Storm, who was from Holland, who sailed in 1620 here. And he kept a book called Old Dirk's Book. So it's Dirk Storm. And he kept, yeah, great. I'm really glad
That's
he
a great
did.
Name.
Yeah, I know. I love it. and he landed there and he had a family there. And that's where the Dutch came and created their colony or their settlement. And it's still there. The church is still there, the Dutch Reformed Church. And that, you know, they have their community. So, and then a lot of those, the people in the Dutch community there during the Revolutionary War, they were loyalists. So when they lost, they left and got granted land in New Brunswick. And then that's where they met up with my Irish ancestors. And then they came into Maine and, you know, kind of a roundabout way. But that's what happened there. So yes, there is a large Dutch settlement there, and they kept fabulous records. And they were there at the beginning of Manhattan. The beginning of Manhattan, they were there. And I think there's still a pub or something in Manhattan that has connections to those people. So I have to figure that out too. But
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And the reason I asked is my ex-wife, she's got Dutch going back. And in fact, her, I don't know if it was third or fourth great grandfather, something like that, maybe fifth. Van Ricken. They owned Rikers Island.
Oh, no way.
Stuff. But her family was throughout like Hempstead, Long Island.
Okay.
They owned farms. Yep. They were Dutch, they were Germans, and Irish. But they were Quakers in Flushing, Queens. I don't know if you're familiar with New York City, but
a little bit.
They were Quakers in Flushing, I guess, you know. Same thing, 1600s, something
right.
like that.
Right. I mean, that's the beginning almost of New York City.
So Burgoyne, you haven't been able to find the Gateway ancestor through that
no.
line?
I've tried both ways. I've studied General Johnny Burgoyne. I think I've studied him the most of anybody on the planet. I have all of his books, all the writings, and it's just an interesting thing that he had four children in his will. And I can trace three of them, but not the other one that's supposedly my ancestor. He's gone. He was the youngest. He was a boy. And when General Johnny died, they all went to Lancashire to live with Edward Stanley. And then the third, that son's never heard from again. I can't find him. And legitimately, I can't. I see names pop up, but I can't prove who's who. And I don't have... You know, I would love to like take up residency in England for about maybe as long as it takes for me to find that answer. Just if it's true or if it's not true, what happened to that child? I can't find it. And I just need help. That's all, I guess. And to do it. And I don't have the time at this point. But and I've done all the research over here that I can do. I just need that link. I just need to know what happened to that second son. I can't find him.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, my children are adopted, and my daughter, I've been able to trace her back because her family's been, both her birth parents were here in the, you know, Virginia in the 1600s and things like that. And I was able to trace her back to the Despensa family.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's direct from Daniel Boone.
And there you go. That's, I mean, because he's such a mythical figure almost. You almost forget that he was a real person.
That was a real person.
Right. It's like he was just big, bigger than life thing. So I did some research for a family, for a friend that I know, and they were in the, they had the Spencer line, and it went right to the same area where, you know, the Lady Diana Spencer's family was from. And I, you know, I haven't gone any further with that, but I mean, it seems to me there's got to be a connection there somewhere, but, you know, also, yeah. So the Van, we have connections to the Van Tassel family, some, and I, and that I got to do that before October. So I'm going to figure out the exact connection, but the Van Tassels were featured in, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow by Washington Irving. Because one of the,
I think that sounded familiar.
Right. Yeah. It's a love. I think it's the love interest there is a Van Tassel. And she was a real person that he took. He used her name for the story. So, and we are connected to that family somehow. And I have to figure out how, but they're all kind of connected in that Dutch community, probably sooner or later. And I also found that there is a Springsteen in my tree. And you know that Bruce Springsteen's paternal line went right through Sleepy Hollow too, I believe, and through the Dutch.
I didn't know that. You know, his grandmother was Sorrentino.
Was she?
Yeah.
All right.
Not related to me, but yeah, I there's a Robert, another Robert Sorrentino that I interviewed, and he's actually related to Bruce.
Oh, there you go.
His second cousins or something like that.
Yeah. 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 So, someday that'll come up too again, but I mean, you know, there's all, we're all connected, right? So.
Well, yeah, that is true in some way, shape, or form. My son is my wife's fifth cousin.
Really?
Because his birth father was from Puerto Rico. My wife's father was from Puerto Rico.
There you go.
And you know, I was going through the ancestry one day, and I said, did you know Matthew's related to you? And, yeah. And you know, strange happenings with DNA, certainly things pop. Well, did you have anything strange pop up in your DNA that you?
Oh yes, we have an NPE, and so what we found was that my grandfather, and this is all it's public knowledge. It's related in my podcast, but my grandfather was not my biological grandfather, and through you know, the writings and things that my uncle had saved, we were able to parse together the what happened kind of thing. Where did this information come from? How come we didn't know it type of thing? So yeah, we found a lot of things. And my co-host, my sister, Laura, she's the Senna Morgan queen. And people in DNA know what that is. She can look at a number and say, nope, that's not right. Instantly, she'll just know. So she's been able to say, oh, I don't, that's not a right. That's that, these aren't connected right or something. So we found several things. And it's to us, my sister and I are both registered nurses. So we had that little bit of biology, you know, knowledge that it's interesting to us to have to figure those little puzzles out.
Yeah. Well, my great-grandfather on my paternal grandmother's father, he was filho natural. And so that's the way they said without it, wedlock, right, in Italy. And he's got two birth records that I found. I call them birth cards. Sometimes when you look on the Antonati, they have a little card or something like that. Or I think maybe Alessandro found it. But anyway, he's got two different mothers listed.
How can that be?
Well, I can't figure it out. He's on his actual birth record, right, from the Comune, it shows, I think it shows Maria Savino. But this other card shows a Maria Leone.
Oh.
And it says that he was not, you know, he was born out of wedlock.
Right.
He's the oldest son from my great-great-grandfather. And they were a noble family. So the only thing I could figure out is that, and I even said to somebody, I said, well, maybe, you know, maybe my great great grandfather's, you know, wife, the person he married, because I don't think he was married to the other person, maybe they allowed her to adopt. And I said, no, they wouldn't be able to do that. But somehow, I guess he made him, they made him legitimate somehow. And that's the only thing I could think of why he had these two cards. Now, maybe because they had money.
Right.
They were able to pay somebody off. They were able to change their records. But it's quite clear in his record that he was, you know, he was not born from somebody who was, he was, you know, he wasn't married. My second great grandfather wasn't married. So that was, and that was a big mystery. That really hit me when I saw that. I was like, wow, you know, nobody ever, well, I don't even know if anybody even knew. I'm sure my grandmother didn't know.
And that was in Italy?
That was in Italy, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So their norms are a little bit different than here, you know. But the things that we found out were, you know, about my grandfather not being my biological grandfather was that everyone in that age, everybody knew, except we didn't know. You know, it was like this big secret. It was all like a, it was open secret then, right? That everybody knew, but nobody said type of thing. But when it came to us, we didn't know. And it's like, how come we didn't know, but they knew, you know, or nobody talked about it. And so that was kind of just, that was the revelation. Like, you know, how does that happen or why? It, you know, it's just the way things, nobody talked about that kind of thing. My father never talked about it. And so that's all, you know, it's all gone to the grave. So we had to kind of try and figure it out, but it's, you know, it's nothing malicious, as we said, but just the way things were.
Yeah. Well, my good friend, he found his older brother done DNA. No idea.
I know.
It was the first son born to his father. He obviously wasn't married.
Yeah.
And, but in that case, I don't think anybody knew.
Right.
I don't think that, you know, back then, you know, we're talking 1949 or something like that. You know, they would hand the baby to the next door neighbor if somebody wanted a child.
Yeah.
I have a good friend. She was born in, late 60s, early 70s. And she didn't have a birth certificate. This is New York City.
And no birth certificate.
No birth certificate.
Oh, boy. How do you fix that?
Oh, she said it was like torture. She had to go to court. And, you know, her adoptive parents were Italian. And her father told her, you're my daughter. That's all you need to know. She said, but I need to get a license. I need to do stuff.
when we're in Italy and I'm asking questions about, you know, this relative or that relative, and they just have no concept, which is, it's not a bad thing. It's they have no concept of how interested we are. Like, well, who was your father? Who was your other father? You know, that, and they just, you know, they're here, you know, they're just all here. And so, you know, we just asked where the relatives were and what they were. Well, they just, you know, we would just always been here. So they didn't, it was no concern to them. And, you know, we just asked a lot of questions and it's obvious that their, you know, that their concept is different than ours as far as family history. Their family history is written very well as far as it's thousands of years old. So
they've been in the same towns for 300, 400 years.
Isn't that, and that's exactly what it was. So in Monte Fiascone, they said, when we said family tree, they said, it's painted on a wall down in the restaurant. And we said, I want to go to that restaurant. And so, you know, no big deal. So we talk about it for a few days or whatever. And then they had gone and asked about it, you know, so that they could bring us there, and come to find out they had painted it.
Painted it over.
So the family tree that we were looking for was there and now it's gone. And so why would they do that without, did anybody take a picture, you know? But, and when I go to the family history library and I look up Monte Fiascone, there's tons of records. They're all in Italian, of course. And there's a lot, the last name is Nicolai, of course. So it's Salvatore Nicolai and his ancestors. There's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things. So they're all there, but that would just take, like, that's like a one place study. You would just go to Monte Fiascone and just do just that. And I don't have time for that. But if someone does, that would be great.
Yeah, well, I have, I have a my second great grandmother was from Lucerne, Switzerland.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, where'd this come from? Right. She lived in Naples, obviously. And, you know, I found her on one of the, you know, Antonati records. And I was like, I'm never going to get any place with this. Right.
Yeah.
M-O-H-R. Her last name was Moore. And I was just, you know, poking around the internet one day. And I tell everybody this, just poke around. You never know what's going to show up. And I found two books that listed the officers in the Neapolitan army. And I think 1853 and 1857 or something like that. And I found my second great grandfather, Filippo Caracciolo. He was a lieutenant in the horse guard or something like that, or cavalry. And just above him, I see this Bernardo Moore.
Oh,
and he
wow.
was a captain in the Swiss Guard. And I was like, Swiss Guard? I thought they guarded the Pope. Anyway, you know, doing
some
research.
That's exactly what was, that was coming to my mind.
Yeah, doing some research, I found out that, you know, in the 16, 17, 1800s, the Swiss cantons, especially the Catholic cantons, would send mercenaries to various countries or kingdoms. Mm-hmm. Send their soldiers there for and get paid. So anyway, he was assigned there. And I'm like, okay, well, I found a father, but, you know, that's it. Well, again, poking around one day, I put in something about, you know, Swiss ancestry. And I saw a link to a place and they said, if you have Swiss ancestors, email us in Italian, German, or English, and we'll answer you. So
right.
I sent it and I said, here's the last name, Moore, M-H-R. It's Elisa Moore. Her father was Bernardo Moore. They sent me back a link to all the prominent families in Switzerland or Lucerne.
Right.
And they had handwritten trees going back to the 1500s.
Wow.
So I was able to trace this whole tree back. And it's,
just by poking around.
Poking around. That's why I tell people, you have to poke around. Don't, you know, walk away for a week or two and come back. You'll find what you're looking for. It's out there, you know, if you're just persistent.
Right.
And yeah, that really blew me away. And so then I found another family, Amrine, and I forget how I found it. Anyway, this person sent me back a picture of I guess, for lack of a better word, like a shield or something like that. Or
like a crest or no?
Yeah, but it had the two families on it.
Yeah, okay.
It had my grandfather's crest, his family, Caracciolo. Mm-hmm. And then next to it, it had the Moore family. And, you know, Switzerland, there's no nobility or anything like that. But when you look at all of these records, there were probably 20 or 25 families in Lucerne that ran the show for like 300 years.
Well, and the Moors were one of them.
And the Moors were one of those families, yeah.
So by being on the same shield, were they married? Were they two families that had joined, right?
Yeah. There were two families that had joined. I'm assuming they went there at some point in time. And it was like,
mm-hmm.
I'll send you the picture. They were side by side. Yeah. And
that's awesome.
You know, so you never know what you never know what you're gonna find.
Right.
My gateway ancestor was Italian.
Yep.
You know, who knew? I don't know if there's a fellow by the name of Kai White who does these fantastic charts. And he does it. It's not like your normal ancestry chart. He puts all the crests and things like that out there. Mm-hmm. And when I asked him about Caracciolo, he said, well, who's, you know, who are your family? And I said, well, you know, Prince Luigi from the state and the state. And he said, well, I've never done Italians before, but let me look. I'll see. And I had sent him what I had and he came back and he said, yeah, you know, and I was able to confirm all of this with, you know, cousins in Italy.
Right.
Just an amazing journey.
Yeah.
But so we have to find you. Now I'm going to go crazy looking for this Burgoyne guy. because we have to find your gateway ancestor because it's probably there.
So, you know, the thing is, so, I mean, you would think General Johnny Burgoyne has more things written about him.
Yeah.
Except, and, you know, and then he retired and had four children by his mistress, evidently. And, but the youngest son, and, you know, you can find him. He's in the will. And that's it. You know, once General, and then I cannot find him again. I mean, I just don't know how that happens. The other three children married well and had successful lives. What happened to that? I assume he died, but then Aunt Sadie's tree would be wrong if he died, you know, but nobody mentions him. I've even read, you know, the wills of the other children and they don't mention him. And it's just,
maybe he was the black sheep or something like that.
Well, I'm thinking either that, you know, he might. Yeah, right. I mean, something
or
happened.
He just had, you know,
did his own thing.
Yeah. And had children, you know, somebody, you know, out of wedlock or whatever. And it just, there's just that, not that connection.
Right.
But yeah, now tomorrow I'm going to be looking for Burgoynes all over.
His last known whereabouts was Lancashire, Ireland. I mean, I'm sorry, England.
That's too funny.
I've been looking for a long time.
So before we go, if anybody wants to check out your podcast, where do they go?
Well, they're on all the platforms. I'm native to Apple, but it's Apple and Spotify and Google and iHeart, all those. And it's called Chasing Hazel's Tales, Hazel being my grandmother. And, you know, start at the beginning because that's where we start talking about Hazel and it gets really interesting. But it's really, it's been a fun ride.
It always is. It always is.
Yep.
Well, thanks again. I really appreciate it.
I've had a wonderful time. I really appreciate it. It's fun to talk about.